Danica Rome made history last month when she was elected to the Virginia House of Delegates in an election that saw big gains for Democrats. Rome's victory over a longtime incumbent also made her the first openly transgender person elected to Virginia's state legislature. It happened the same day that two transgender candidates won seats on the Minneapolis City Council, Andrea Jenkins and Philippe Cunningham. Well, Danica Rome was in the Twin Cities last night for a fundraiser with Jenkins and Cunningham. I spoke with Rome yesterday afternoon before the event, first, actually, about some news that had just come out. You might have heard this yesterday, that the Pentagon said it would allow transgender people to enlist in the military starting January 1st after a court ruling.
The way that I put it back home during the campaign, in particular, when, you know, the president tweeted out, you know, his proposed ban in the first place on trans people serving in the military, was that affects the leadership and readiness of Quantico Marine Corps Base over in Prince William County, my home county. Mm-hmm. This is a local issue for us as far as I'm concerned, because I know active duty and veteran transgender service members who have contributed to the leadership and readiness of Quantico. And that affects Prince William County directly. And so I protested it when he tweeted that out in the first place. I drove over to the White House and I protested right there in Lafayette Square with a lot of other people, just in an improv way, saying that this is terrible when we're just talking about people who are capable, able, and willing to die for you to protect your rights and to protect their and your country. You know, trans people in general shouldn't have to keep proving themselves as, oh, what, are they emotionally stable? Are there, you know, is their hormone replacement therapy going to affect them on the battlefield if they, you know, don't, if they go an extra hour without their estrogen, or are they going to freak out? Mm-hmm. It's like, no, we're perfectly capable of handling ourselves. We take, you know, our shots, pills, whatever it is. Bam, we go about our day. Thanks. It's like trans people are just as capable and just as ready, just as able to serve in the military as any other American. And the fact that they have to wait until January 1st for this is a shame, because, frankly, it should have never been a ban in the first place.
What has most surprised you about the attention you've gotten since your win?
That's a really good question, because I haven't really thought about it too much. I knew the day that I got into the race on January 3rd. I knew before then, like I'm a reporter. You know, I spent 10 and a half years between two newspapers, you know, 9 years, 2 months, and 2 weeks as the lead reporter of the Gainesville Times in Prince William County, Virginia, authoring more than 2,500 news stories about my, you know, degree at Prince William County area, which is my lifelong home of 33 years. So I knew how reporters act to certain storylines, and the idea of trans woman versus most anti-LGBT legislator in the South. Of course, like one analyst said, was like, reporters are going to, it'll be catnip for reporters. Like, well, yeah. So I knew the day I got into race, it was mm-hmm. going to get national attention. But at the same time, I was like, I'm running because I really hate the road near my house that's been backed up for 25 years, and maybe we should fix it. Instead of singling out and stigmatizing our constituents based on what they look like, where they come from, how they worship, or who they love. And that to me was unacceptable. So I said, well, maybe we should actually focus on, you know, public service instead of singling out and stigmatizing the very people we were elected to serve. So because of that, I knew there would be the national attention. And then after I won, I knew I was going to get a flood of letters, emails, you know, everything else that's come with it. But I do think that sometimes the emotional toll of hearing the personal stories can really take you off guard. Like yesterday, I was raising money over in Castro, and this guy comes up to me. He was probably in his mid-60s or so, and behind his glasses, you know, his eyes welled up, and he extended his arms out toward me. And when I went to go shake his hand, he said, "These hands have touched Harvey's." He's talking about Harvey Milk. And sometimes you get a comment like that and you realize that they're projecting their hope to you. They're projecting what they want to see in society based on the fact that you've just broken a barrier. And it's like, look, I understand that, you know, as a trans woman, yes, there has not been an out-and-seated, you know, transgender state legislator in American history. You know, Althea Garrison, you know, she was elected in 92, but, you know, she was outed after she was elected and she was never reelected to anything else again, which is kind of sad. But and then Stacey Lawton up in New Hampshire, she was elected, but she wasn't allowed to be seated. She wasn't supposed to be on the ballot in the first place. So, you know, I understand the history-making part of it, and at the same time, I also understand that I am a local elected official who ran on a platform of traffic, jobs, schools, equality, healthcare, you know, making sure that we're taking care of our local infrastructure and talking about boring stuff like water infrastructure until people are blue in the face and they start tuning me out.
But it does sound like it does sound like.
But I have a national profile while doing it.
You have that profile, and so you have had this moment of realizing that you're going to have to carry more, perhaps, than you thought you would when people come to you with their stories or send you emails.
It's because of the volume that come in. If someone from the 13th district of the Virginia House of Delegates sends me an email, I respond every time. Bam. You know, like I will absolutely personally, that is, I'm going to go back to that. But for the extra volume, I tend to be much more judicious, even when it's really, really nice. It's just that there are so many. But sometimes you'll get something that's particularly compelling, and that will certainly draw a response from me.
There was a photo last month that went viral in the Washington Post of you on election night. I think this is in the restaurant or wherever you were having your party. And you had just taken a call from former Vice President Joe Biden. And the photo was of you basically hunched on the ground with a friend of yours or a campaign manager.
So she was actually, her name is Marilyn Karp. She is a resident of the 13th District. She was also she was a great volunteer for us as a part of Indivisible Nova West. And if you look really closely at the photo, if you look at my back right foot or left, whichever one is exposed anyway, you'll see this little white thing hanging out from it. That's actually a plastic bag because it had been a torrential downpour basically the whole afternoon, whole evening. I had to go home, change into dry clothes, and I, you know, I'm broke. I don't have money for like new boots or rain boots or anything like that. So I put my feet into two like trash bags. And like one from the Dollar Tree, one from Marshall's, wrapped my feet in them, put those in my shoes. And I hadn't even taken those off yet because my shoes were so soaked by the time that those numbers were coming in. And then 19 out of 20 precincts reported. And then I had gotten a lot of calls like, wish me congrats. I was like, don't do it yet. It's still waiting on absentees from Prince William.
Right.
But then when Joe Biden calls you, that's about the time that you usually declare victory.
Yeah. And you broke down. I mean, it's a moment.
I was crying without the tears. It was just like the emotional impact was there and I'm like audibly sobbing, but I'm so dehydrated and I'm so exhausted, so sleep deprived. And just after 10 months and 4 days of nonstop campaigning, it was just like, you know what? I don't feel like standing right now.
You mentioned in one of your campaign ads you wanted to be a delegate. You wanted to run because you wanted to make it not a big deal that a trans person would be in office. And, you know, you noted you wanted to be boring. You want to talk about infrastructure and things like that. But how do you do that?
Well,
how do you make it not a big deal? Is it simply a matter of volume and get more people to win office?
It's pretty simple. When I'm sitting at a dais talking to people about the need to replace cast iron water pipes with ductile iron pipes because ductile iron pipes are more flexible, they last longer, they don't have the same problems with tuberculation that cast iron pipes have after they've been in place for 60, 70, 80, or sometimes even 90 years, and they're not prone to the major breaks that you'll see in a 12-inch water main. As I'm having that dialogue, and I watch people tune out and just basically go like, oh, God, that's when I realized that I've really made it as a transgender politician. Because, yes, you too, as a trans lady, can put people to sleep.
So if anyone on a sewer district here in Minnesota is listening.
If you want to talk to stormwater management.
You're ready.
If you want to talk about my opposition to toll roads. If you want to talk about, replacing traffic lights with overpasses and roundabouts so you have more flow and go, I'm a girl. Absolutely.
All right. Well, that's cool. There are two transgender candidates who won election here in Minneapolis on the city council, Andrea Jenkins and Philippe Cunningham. Have you talked to them? Have you gotten together with them?
We were all in the same training program. The Gay and Lesbian Victory Institute's candidate campaign training program that was November 17th to 20th, 2016, over in Dallas, Texas at the Hilton Anatole. And yeah, for four straight days, we were there learning the ropes. I made quick friends with Philippe and Andrea, and to see both of them when they are so wildly qualified and so good at what they do, it's just like, yes, like they absolutely should have. And you had groups like the Victory Fund, Victory Institute. Then you have Trans United Fund. You have groups like Human Rights Campaign. You have a lot of other groups, everything from Pride Fund to End Gun Violence to, in my case, Equality Virginia Advocates. all these different groups that were part of a larger coalition to come in and help us out. And that's the important part here. What TransUnited Fund was able to do for me during the Democratic primary was in the last 2 days, they sent in canvassers to help us knock doors. And having people willing to come knock on doors, I hope what that also did was it allowed some of our volunteers who came in to relay a message to other trans women, especially where it's like, you know, even if you don't have passing privilege, we understand the fear that comes with the idea that you would be outed, you would be clocked, or anything else that comes to the doors. And trans people absolutely risk real violence, especially trans women of color, where the overwhelming majority of, you know, trans women who are killed each year are trans women of color. Not to say that white women don't get killed either. We certainly do. But I hope what that showed in our race was that for all the trans volunteers who came in and they came out able to tell their stories, and they found that there was a lot of kindness among the residents of the 13th District who were just happy to talk politics or just happy to hear from someone who was trying to campaign for something instead of just against someone. I hope that helps dispel the notion that you are inherently unsafe to knock on doors because you're trans. But some people are really afraid of it, and for good reason.
My perspective, I would have never thought about that. But when you think about running for office, you have to go knock on doors. It's part and parcel to winning office, no matter what the office.
Right.
I would never process the thought that in the campaign infrastructure, mm-hmm. you have to make sure that your volunteers actually feel safe.
Yeah, let me give it on the door. Let me explain. Basically, here's the thing: when you're trans. If you don't have passing privilege, you can feel very threatened when you're out knocking doors. And then you say, okay, well, what else can I do? What if I'm on the phone? Well, if people misgender you on the phone and say, hey, sir, when you're ma'am, or hey, ma'am, when you're sir, mm-hmm. whatever it is, and that just keeps triggering your gender dysphoria, and so it turns into this like little tornado of dysphoria over and over and over again. You hear that more than once in a day, you're done. It's just like, nope, I'm out with this. So then it's like, I still want to help. I'm broke. I'm afraid to knock on doors. I don't want to talk on the phone. What else can I do? Mm-hmm. And in my campaign set, we were saying, we have a place for you. If you want to help us online, please do. Help spread the word through social media. If you would like to write handwritten postcards to send out to the residents of the 13th District, reminding them to come out to vote, you know, from our very targeted list of, you know, highly likely Democratic voters, to just give them that reminder, we need your help with that too. If you can help us on the administrative end, you know, just putting in data. If you can help us meet people who can help us raise money, even if you can't afford it to do yourself, great. There's always a role in a campaign for anyone who's willing to volunteer for us. I remember I had my first mass canvas. We had 25 volunteers show up. I only knew three of them. So I was like, wow, you know, like, whoa, that's really cool. And I had one person who I knew through the heavy metal community, and I had a lot of metal people, mm-hmm. you know, knock doors for me because, you know, I've been in a band for the last 11 years.
And just quickly, you're in a metal band called Cab Ride Home.
Yeah.
And you have the chip teeth from hitting microphones to prove it and everything.
Oh, it's like, a chip tooth.
It's one chip tooth, sorry.
One chip tooth, yeah. so practice safe vocals. Always put a, you know, little pop thing on your microphone.
Uh-huh.
And... yeah, so I had a lot of people, you know, wearing like, you know, black hoodies and leather jackets come out to knock doors for us too. It's like, cool, welcome, you know, like that's cool. I have no problem with that. We probably had more tattooed people and probably more trans people knock on doors for us than most campaigns will ever know that they've had knock doors for them. But that was cool. For me, it was like that coalition of everyone else who's ever felt forgotten or felt like that they haven't been included, as well as people who were like, hey, we're, you know, yeah, maybe their identifiers are, you know, they're mm-hmm. cisgender, they're straight, they're, you know, well off, or they're, you know, just middle class, whatever
it
is.
Or they just hate cast iron pipes.
And they just can't stand pipes that break, like it happened in Town Hay Market a few weeks ago. Yeah, that's basically right. Or, you know, like the way that I put it is, as transgender people, we don't get to take our unicorns to work each day. We don't get to fly over traffic. So transportation is inherently a trans issue as well. And I also, you know, recognize the intersectionality here between trying to get to work and the idea that public transportation, when it's inadequate, is an issue of discrimination, because people who come from low economic means, you know, if they can't afford a car, if, you know, they're riding a bus for a reason and they have fewer routes and they have and you have rising fares, it becomes harder for them to get to their jobs. It becomes harder for them to have more quality of lifetime back home. It has more time. It's harder for them to have more time with their kids. And so we have to provide adequate mass transportation for the most number of people. What I always say is Democrats don't win on fear. We win on hope. We win when we inspire people to vote for us. We need to give them a reason to show up and a reason to believe in what we're doing. And so the people who were coming to knock doors for me and making calls for me, overwhelmingly, they weren't telling me that they were doing that because they couldn't stand Delegate Marshall. They were telling me that they did that because they believed in the mission of what we were doing. That's the important part, is that, you know, our message of take care of your infrastructure and respect your constituents, so no matter what they look like, where they come from, how they worship or who they love, they know they are celebrated, respected, and welcomed because of who they are in our community, not despite it, not for what discriminatory politicians tell them they're supposed to be. That message of inclusion, as well as get blank done, that resonates with a lot of people.
Danica Rome, delegate-elect in the state of Virginia here in the Twin Cities for an event. Thanks so much for being here. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me here.